Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Therapists in the Wild. This month, we are going to be comparing concepts from dialectical behavior therapy, which is what we talk about all the time on this podcast, to another third wave treatment that you may or may not have heard of called acceptance and commitment therapy, which was developed by Dr. Steve Hayes. If you'd like to learn more about ACT, or acceptance and commitment therapy, we will be posting links to resources in our episode description. And today, just so you know, we will specifically be talking about the concept of cognitive diffusion.
Yes, and we are excited to talk about ACT today. And just a note, acceptance and commitment therapy, sometimes people call it ACT, but Steve Hayes, who developed the treatment, says that he likes it to be called ACT because it's a treatment that's very much focused on action and your behavior. And so calling it ACT can kind of remind you of that, of one of the goals of the treatment. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
It's interesting. And it's a treatment that I've been doing a lot in my work now. Right now I'm working at a practice that focuses on treating people with anxiety disorders and OCD, and mostly does exposure therapy for those issues, but I incorporate a lot of strategies and skills and kind of the philosophy behind acceptance and commitment therapy into my work because there's a lot of research behind that treatment for anxiety disorders specifically and OCD. And I've been really learning a lot about it and really enjoying it. So we kind of thought we could bring in some of what I'm doing in my day-to-day life professionally onto the podcast and kind of talk about the similarities and differences from DBT and maybe how some of these principles from ACT, like cognitive diffusion, can actually enhance your practice of DBT.
Yeah. And I'm really excited because in my work now, I am still pretty exclusively focusing on dialectical behavior therapy, although I have learned concepts from ACT over the years. And so I certainly try to incorporate it into my work. And I'm going to be learning from Molly alongside you, the listeners. So I have been particularly interested in learning more about Molly's day-to-day work. I would first be interested in hearing from you. You know, you kind of mentioned that there's a lot of research for the effectiveness of ACT for anxiety disorders, OCD specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, can we kind of talk in an overarching way about some of the similarities and differences between DBT and ACT, just to orient me and our listeners?
Sure, yeah. So I know that there's been a lot of research that's been done on ACT for depression, chronic pain, psychosis, and then like we talked about anxiety and OCD. My understanding, and I'm definitely not an expert in the research, but my understanding is that there's still research being done on its effectiveness for treating personality disorders like borderline personality disorder. And so I think DBT is definitely still kind of the gold standard treatment for borderline personality disorder. And so I think that ACT is typically used more for issues like anxiety, depression, pain, chronic pain, things like that, rather than personality disorder. So I think that's one of the big differences, is kind of what it's intended to treat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, DBT is in a lot of ways, even though it's principle-based and can be applied flexibly, I think it is very much structured to treat a lot of the issues that come up for people with a borderline personality disorder diagnosis, although it doesn't have to be, it can be applied to other types of, you know, of mental health concerns. And, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting place to start because ACT and DBT have some pretty similar foundations. And so mm-hmm. maybe there are concepts from each that can be applied to similar problems.
Sure. Yeah. I think some of the main similarities, so I guess like under this umbrella of CBT, we have ACT, we have DBT, we have exposure therapy. And I think that ACT and DBT are both focused on helping you live the kind of life that you want to live. Mm-hmm. They, you know, at the most, like that's kind of the aim, I think, of both of those treatments, or the goal is like, how do we get you to live a life worth living, or as ACT would put it, a life that's consistent with your values to help you live a rich and meaningful life is usually the language that they use. By moving toward your values or what's important to you, the kind of activities that give your life meaning while you're handling the pain and maybe sometimes the suffering that inevitably kind of comes with moving toward that type of life that you want. And I think there's a lot of similarities between ACT and DBT there of kind of like, how can we move towards what's important to us in life? And how can we effectively manage the intense emotions that are going to come along with that?
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, it reminds me of the DBT scale of effectiveness and how when we're teaching the scale of effectiveness or even the skill of getting into your wise mind, which, you know, getting into your wise mind often yields being effective. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, something that comes up with my patients is, well, what's the right answer here? Like, what's the effective thing to do? And one of the things that I will often have to say is, well, I can't really tell you that, you know, your wise mind might say something different than my wise mind, or what's effective for you might be different than what's effective for me. And yes, I can help talk you through it based on the facts of the situation, based on the potential consequences of making a certain decision. And at the same time, your goals in life might be different from my goals in life.
Right.
And, you know, so I think that has a lot of similarities with sort of acting in line with your values that ACT might sort of guide us to do.
Exactly. And I think sometimes that, I mean, I'm sure in DBT and also in ACT, sometimes that's the hardest part of treatment is figuring out like, what are your values? What kind of life do you want to have? Like, what does your wise mind say about this? You know, sometimes that's the hardest part because that's kind of what drives treatment, or when you're trying to figure out what direction to move in, what are your goals for treatment? It starts with that overarching, you know, that overarching picture of what you kind of envision your life to be, or what type of person do I want to be? How do I want to treat other people? How do I want to be remembered? All that kind of stuff.
And is that a big part of ACT? Because I know that in DBT, you know, a lot of the life experiences that have led patients or clients to treatment in the first place, such as, you know, a lot of trauma in the past, or, you know, just really difficult life experiences that bring patients to DBT in the first place also makes it really hard, understandably, to know what those life worth living goals are, to know kind of how you want to live, what kind of person you want to be. And so is that a big part of ACT too, kind of figuring out like what those values are in the first place?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. In ACT, there's 6 core processes is what they call them. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of the different processes that are touched upon in treatment to help you reach that goal of living in line with your values and building that meaningful life. Mm-hmm. And one of them is values. So like identifying your personal, like you were saying, everybody has different values. So what are your values? What's important to you? And thinking of values almost like a compass that can drive your behavior. So understanding first, like what direction am I even trying to go in is an important part of treatment that sometimes can take a little bit of time, you know, and energy and like specific energy devoted to figuring that out. And then another core process is committed action. So the specific behaviors that you do in order to move toward your values. So what are some of the goals that you can set along the way in that direction of your value? So if your value is like moving west, then okay, getting to California might be a goal of yours. And then of course you can always keep moving further west.
That kind of reminds me of the accumulating positives in the long-term skill from DBT that we taught as part of emotion regulation, right? As yes, I can have my sort of long-term value. This is what I want out of my life. And in order to actually bear fruit from having that value, what are my shorter term goals that I can do every single day to live a richer life and add, you know, positive emotional experiences to my day. So,
Exactly. Yeah. I definitely think every time I teach that skill in DBT, I think about ACT because I think they really do overlap a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some of the other core processes are self as context, which basically means, honestly, very similar to wise mind. It's kind of about like being able to observe what's happening from a mindful place, a little bit of a detached perspective, and observe your experiences so that you aren't consumed by them, but that there's a little more space between you and what's happening to figure out how you want to respond mindfully.
So kind of like rather than being in emotion mind and letting your emotions make your decisions for you, understand that you are a person who is having those emotions. And
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And understanding how in different contexts you might act differently or feel differently. And so observing what's happening in that one given moment, and then, so those were three. Then there's also mindfulness. So really just contacting the present moment is what they call it. So being right here, right now. Acceptance is another one, which is kind of synonymous with willingness. Like, how willing are you to be with the pain that you're experiencing in a given moment in order to move toward your values? Like, are you willing to sit with this pain so that you can have a loving relationship or whatever it may be?
Rather than avoiding your emotions, probably is what,
right?
Is what is a big part of DBT. And also from what I remember, a big part of ACT is that it's avoiding painful emotions that is actually what causes a lot of problems rather than just contacting, you know, just kind of sitting with the emotion and letting it pass.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because I think anything that is meaningful to us in life, and this probably, I mean, I would go as far as to say that this is probably true for everybody, that what is most important to you in life, your values, the flip side of your values is pain. You know, anything that really matters to us in life or that we really care a lot about, it comes with some sort of pain. You know, if you love someone a lot, like, you're opening yourself up to potentially getting hurt. You know, what if you lose them? Or what if there's difficulties in the relationship that you have to navigate that are painful or difficult? So I think a big part of DBT and ACT is like, how can we, if we want to have this life that is going to feel meaningful and fulfilling, then how can we be willing to sit with the feelings that are going to come up along the way, you know, and how can we not let those derail us so that we can continue to move towards the things that are important to us?
Yeah.
And then the last core process in ACT is cognitive diffusion. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay. So cognitive diffusion. Sounds like a pretty fancy word.
It does.
And I mean, I have a lot to learn about it and to talk about with Molly. And we have already touched on it on the podcast. So I think it's important to direct listeners back to the episode that we did on mindfulness of current thoughts, which in DBT is actually a distress tolerance skill. So it's a way to kind of handle it when you're feeling really distressed. I think it also can be used in DBT to regulate your emotions. So it can kind of be used for both. That essentially when you are ruminating excessively, when you kind of just can't get away from the thoughts that are racing through your mind, one way to handle it is to sort of watch those thoughts pass. And I'm pretty sure that in the episode, I mean, it was a while ago at this point, I'm pretty sure we gave some exercises to kind of watch your thoughts pass rather than needing to really experience and latch on to every single one of them. So I just kind of wanted to give that context, but now let's jump into how ACT defines cognitive diffusion.
Sure. And thinking back to that episode, I do think there's a lot of similarities between that and this. So if you want to learn more about diffusion, I think that episode or that part of that episode would be very relevant. But when you're fused with a thought, it basically means that your thoughts are dominating your actions, meaning like the thoughts that you're having are influencing very heavily what you're actually, how you're behaving in that moment. It's also dominating your attention. You know, your thoughts are that's where your focus is on your thoughts rather than on your surroundings or what you're actually doing in the present moment. You're focused on the thought.
I'm trying to think of just to kind of like give an example. I mean, I feel like we use this example a lot of sort of the public speaking.
Yes, that's a great example.
I think everyone can kind of relate to that. Like, imagine a scenario where you are giving a speech to a large auditorium of people, and the whole time there are thoughts running through your head about, you know, what a huge deal this is, how stupid you probably look, how your voice sounds shaky, how everyone's judging you. I mean, obviously in that scenario, if those are the thoughts running through your head, you're going to present a lot differently. You're going to physically be acting differently than if you either are fully present and just sort of saying the words, connecting with the audience, or even having thoughts like, I'm doing a great job. Like, this is going really well. Yeah.
Right. That's a great example. And I also have a lot of anxiety about public speaking. So I can relate to that personally too. Just like, yeah, when you have those thoughts, and sometimes you can't control those thoughts when you're in that type of a situation, like they're kind of automatic thoughts that just pop up, whether you want them to be there or not, like whether it's convenient to be having them at that moment or not. So how you relate to the thought or how you carry or hold that thought can really influence how much of an impact that it has on you.
Yeah.
And if you're fused with that thought, if you're kind of stuck to it, or if it's stuck to you in your mind, then that's going to be really hard to be focused on what you're saying in the speech and what you're communicating and connecting with the audience, because you're going to be so in your head. Mm-hmm. Versus if you can kind of defuse from that thought, which is very difficult. And we'll talk about how to do that, but it can really help you like give a little space between you and the thought. That's how it's often described, like create some distance between you and the thought, so that in that space between you and the thought, you have a little bit of time to stop and think about and respond mindfully, really like from a place of wise mind, rather than simply reacting to it and kind of acting from that thought. Just like from emotion mind or reasonable mind.
Yeah. You know, something that's coming up for me right now as you're saying this is how some people just don't tend to struggle with this as much as others. Or another way, some people tend to struggle more with this than others. Uh-huh. And I think way back when I gave this example on the podcast of how, you know, of how someone very close to me in my life will just sit on the subway. And, you know, I've asked him, what is the experience like of sitting for you of being on the subway? And he says that he just kind of sits and watches people getting on and off and listens to the noises and, you know, maybe thinks about what he's going to have for dinner and then makes eye contact with someone and smiles and then waves. And meanwhile, I'm on the subway, like,
oh my God,
thinking about what happened at work that day and what I could have done differently and what I could have said differently and why I said that thing and how that meeting could have gone better. And we're just having these totally different experiences. And it just makes me think like some brains are just stickier than others. Mm-hmm. Some brains are almost like this magnetic field where a thought or a memory or a judgment or something will just kind of stick, and it's so hard to get rid of.
Yes. Yes. I just had an image of those sticky mousetraps.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you just get one and a thought just gets like really stuck in there and it's hard to get it out of your head.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes a little while even to realize that you are stuck to a thought. That's the first step.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, like, what are some thoughts throughout your life that you feel like have really hooked you or that your mind has gotten really stuck to, either like in the past or things now that come up for you? Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there were certain memories that would really stick, like memories of maybe when I had done something that I found embarrassing or, you know, a situation that had gone differently than I would have liked it to. And I can almost remember as a little kid, like lying in bed at night and having the memory just sort of rush into my brain out, you know, outside of my control, and almost like feeling the, that embarrassment come rushing back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with many clients and patients over the years that have said the same thing. Like there's just this memory that won't go away and it'll just like pop in at the least opportune time and they just kind of can't get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of haunts you almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a ghost.
It's like a ghost. And it's making me think like I could see this coming up a lot for people who've gone through trauma, like an intrusive memory, or even OCD, intrusive thoughts coming in when you don't want them to be there.
Yep.
Or even just like really embarrassing moments. Like I've had some really embarrassing moments that when I think back, like the earliest embarrassing moment that I can remember, and this haunted me for years, was when I was probably like 5 years old. I got off the school bus and I ran up to this woman. And my mom has red curly hair. And so I ran up to this woman with red curly hair. I thought she was my mom and I hugged her on her leg. And then she looked down at me and said, "I'm not your mother." Or at least that's how I remember it.
I was going to say, I have some judgments toward that person, but
it's very possible that I was just so scared that I like heard that in a really ominous tone of voice. But
that's so sad.
That was like one of those things where, and I don't know, I don't get this embarrassed about little things now as an adult, but when I was a kid, I used to get so embarrassed by like just little things like that. Like now I would laugh if something like that happened, but for years, my mind just loved to remind me of that time that I hugged that woman who wasn't my mom. And then she was super weirded out by it. And it just brought up a lot of embarrassment.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, I can relate to that too. I've had similar things happen that, you know, I found embarrassing or I wish had gone differently. And it just kind of haunts me. And I mean, the brain is kind of an amazing thing. Like, it is kind of crazy that you can just be going through your life and that memory will pop in and you can feel like you're back in that moment and it can feel visceral and it can totally distract you from what you're doing. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to this because it's kind of part of the human condition, I think.
Absolutely. And I think it is unique to being human. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that my dogs have this. Like, I don't think they're just on a walk one day and then they're like, "Oh, remember last week when it was raining on this walk? Like how terrible was that?" Like, just, I think it's something about our capacity for verbal language. That is part of the reason why our minds do that to us. And it's definitely a uniquely human experience that our minds just remind us of things randomly throughout the day. And that can kind of, you're in the middle of enjoying your day and then all of a sudden the memory pops in and then it totally kind of derails how you feel.
So what do we do about it? How do we knowing what we know, knowing that we can have these thoughts, that some brains are maybe stickier than others, or certain times in life, you might be more likely to have a sticky brain than others, right? I would imagine to bring back to DBT, I would imagine there are some vulnerability factors that can make you more likely to have these thoughts, but more likely to react negatively to them, right? If I'm on vacation, taking a lovely walk, the sun is shining, I just ate a great meal, I am energized, slept well, you know, and I have some embarrassing memory from when I was a child pop in, I probably am more likely to just kind of brush it off than, or notice it and sort of let it pass and maybe laugh at it than if I am,
right,
you know, sitting in traffic, got 2 hours of sleep the night before, just got into a fight with someone, you know, like I would imagine that there's certain vulnerability factors that make it worse.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. And probably sometimes it'll be a lot easier to practice this diffusion and then other times it might be more difficult based on that.
Yeah.
But I would say the aim of cognitive diffusion is to be able to see your thoughts as just words or images in the mind. Like sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're less helpful, but all that they are at the end of the day is just noises, words, images, pictures, memories. And once you can see them as that, once you can see them for what they really are, which is just thoughts, you know, it's not reality, it's just a thought that's going on in your mind, then you can kind of respond to them more flexibly and decide like, okay, is this helping me right now? Is fusing to this thought or sticking to this thought, is that going to help me get to where I want to go? Is that going to help guide me towards that life worth living? Or is that going to help me move in the direction of my values? Or is latching onto this thought right now and getting stuck with it, is that actually going to move me away from what's important in this moment right here, right now? And seeing, diffusing from your thoughts, being able to see them at a little bit of a distance and observe them mindfully can give you that space to figure out how you want to respond to that thought.
You know, I just want to point out that we've been seeped in this world for the past several years. I also think the, you know, concepts of mindfulness and maybe thinking about our thoughts in this way have become a little bit more popularized on social media and just sort of in the cultural landscape. And I just want to point out how different that way of thinking about thoughts is from certainly how I was told to think about my thoughts when I was younger. I mean,
yeah,
I think a lot of us are under the impression that if we're having a thought, it must be there for a reason. And we need to listen to everything and we need to analyze everything and kind of get to the bottom of it. And, you know, sometimes that can be helpful and important. And obviously I think like intuition is a real thing. And, you know, I think there's a whole conversation we could have about this that maybe could be for another time. And it's not to say that no thought is helpful or important. At the same time, thinking about thoughts, as not necessarily more than that, is pretty revolutionary, at least for me.
Oh, it really is. I know. I definitely did not think about thoughts like this. I thought it meant something about me if I was having a certain thought. Like if you have a certain thought, like that makes you a bad person to have a thought like that, or you start to feel guilty about the thoughts that you have. It's interesting. They've done some studies on OCD, and in OCD, you know, people have intrusive thoughts and then they engage in compulsive behaviors to try to relieve some of the distress associated with those thoughts. But they've done studies to see like, is it just people with OCD that have intrusive thoughts or is it everybody? And the research has shown that almost 100% of people have intrusive thoughts. So like you might be standing in the subway and have the thought like, what if I just pushed someone in? Or what if I just jumped in the subway? Or you might be driving and think of just picture like hitting someone, or, you know, it could have all sorts of intrusive thoughts. And actually most people do have these thoughts, even though they seem really like out there, but people probably just don't really talk about them that much. But for people who have OCD, they start to think like, oh no, like, what does this mean about me that I have this thought? Why would I have that type of thought? What's my mind trying to tell me? And really taking a lot of importance with each thought that causes you to get more stuck to it rather than maybe someone who doesn't have OCD can see that like, oh, like that was a weird thought. Like, anyway, what am I going to eat for lunch today?
You know? Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's, you know, we were talking earlier about sticky brain and how some people's brains are stickier than others, which, okay, yeah, maybe to begin with, that is true. And it's the process of engaging with the thought and analyzing it and, okay, what does this mean about me that I had this thought? And does it actually mean that I'm going to be, right? Does it actually mean I'm going to push someone into the subway or whatever the case may be? That makes it stick around. So it's kind of like the interaction with the thought that makes it stick around, that makes it stickier.
Yeah. It like how you relate to the thought can make it become something that you might need treatment for, or something that is just like, oh, that was an interesting thought, and kind of moving on with your day.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. You know, this kind of makes me think of the DBT skill, check the facts, because you know, what we're talking about is taking a thought and, or an interpretation and engaging with it. And there is a DBT skill that teaches us to do just that, right? Which is in a situation, I'm having an emotional reaction to what's going on right now, right? I see my friend across the street. I wave to the friend doesn't wave back. I feel sad or ashamed. So let me think about some other possible reasons why my friend might not have waved back to me. Maybe they didn't see me. Maybe they're having a bad day, whatever, right? So rather than as ACT might have us do right away, which would be, well, that's just a thought that I'm having that my friend hates me, right? So it's interesting. So I wonder, like, what do you think about that and the use of check the facts in a situation like we're talking about with an intrusive thought?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I mean, we could talk it out because I'm not totally sure what I think about it, to be honest. I agree that I think ACT would say that check the facts isn't really necessary. The question that you would ask about your thoughts is, you know, if your friend didn't wave to you across the street, you might ask yourself, like, is it helpful to me given that my goal or my value is to have friendships and relationships, and I like this person, is it helpful for me to be interpreting this interaction as that person hates me? If that's helpful, then go with it. If it's not helpful, can we just see that as a thought? Can we get some distance from that thought? And can we kind of move on and focus on the present moment instead? So they would kind of say, like, check the facts isn't really necessary. It's maybe like focusing too much on the truth of the thought versus the helpfulness of the thought.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because in DBT, we talk about chains, right? We talk about using a couple skills in a row. And I mean, look, different people based on their learning histories have different ways of reacting to situations and need different skills in different situations. So I think we should start out by saying that. I think I personally sometimes benefit from checking the facts and then using some kind of cognitive diffusion technique that we're about to talk about, or, you know, as DBT might call it, mindfulness of current thought, right? And I think that sometimes, and again, this is maybe the differences in the types of problems that each treatment was designed to treat. A lot of times people who are learning DBT might have a really quick emotional reaction that, you know, you might see your friend not wave to you across the street, and like the immediate emotional reaction might be really intense to the point where emotion mind might cause you to do something that you would later regret. And so it can be helpful to sort of take a beat, say, okay, that could be one explanation, or there could be other explanations for this. The process of doing that might get you into wise mind. And then, hey, if this thought sticks around as you're going about your day, you know, what if my friend hates me? What if I did something wrong? Then you could kind of just see that thought as a thought and try to defuse from it. So it can kind of be like a multi-step process.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that that makes sense. I think that checking the facts can help you maybe be more willing to defuse, because if you see it as like, okay, I can recognize the facts of the situation and I can see what my mind is doing on top of that. I can see that my mind is probably adding a little bit of interpretation, maybe based on my learning history or some of my fears or my sensitivities, you know, that it's my mind is interpreting this as, okay, this person hates me. Being able to recognize that that's your mind doing that, and that's not necessarily what's actually happening in the moment, I could see making it a lot easier to be willing to then use a just diffusion strategy to help you, you know, see the thought as just a thought and kind of move on with your day, rather than if you actually think that that person hates you, then you might, I mean, if that's true, you might have a very different approach. You might not want to just let that thought go. And instead you might want to repair the relationship,
right?
Reach out to that person. Like, it might just be a totally different course of action based on whether there's truth to that thought or not, you know?
Right. That's such a good point. You kind of first have to like evaluate the situation sometimes.
Yeah. But then again, like sometimes you could check the facts a million times and your mind might always be telling you, no, you really want to push that person subway, even though you can see that, you know, even though maybe part of you can see, your wise mind might be able to see, like, that's just a thought I'm having, like the emotion mind is really strong of, but what if, and then, so I would say maybe, especially if you struggle with OCD or something like that, like check the facts, yes, but not repetitively. Yeah. Like do it
Don't
once
put
and
as
then
much
kind of
emphasis on that one. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think one of the simplest diffusion exercises is it's a three-step process, and you could just do it in your head wherever you are. The first step is just saying the thought. So in this case, I guess what would that thought be, that the kind of the automatic thought that's popping up in that person's head?
What if I push this person in front of the subway? Okay. Or it could be another thought. Everyone thinks I'm stupid. I did a terrible job in that presentation, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's go with everyone thinks I'm stupid.
Okay.
So you say everyone thinks I'm stupid. Then you say, I'm having the thought that everyone thinks I'm stupid.
All right. I'm having the thought that everyone thinks I'm stupid.
Okay. And then the third part is saying, I'm noticing myself having the thought that everyone thinks I'm stupid.
Okay. I notice I'm having the thought that everyone thinks I'm stupid.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot different than everyone thinks I'm stupid.
It feels different. I mean, when I practice this, I notice that it feels different. Just putting those words in front of it helps you get some distance. So that could be a good strategy, just like if you're having an intrusive thought, and maybe you're not sure if it's true or not, but you just want to kind of practice diffusion, or if you think it's mostly not true, but you know, it's not helpful to be focusing on in that moment, then just kind of going through those three steps on your own and seeing if you feel any difference between the first step and the third step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pointing out the process of having a thought rather than the reality being that you're stupid, right?
I mean, exactly.
It's kind of like the DBT skill of acting non-judgmentally.
I was just thinking that.
Right? Like this party is awful, is then the party becomes awful, right? Because in your mind it's awful and you're going to act in ways that make you not engaged in the party and not talking to anyone. And right. Whereas if you can notice that as a judgment and reframe it and say, what's actually happening is I'm feeling a little anxious and I'm noticing the thought that this party is awful. Like, okay, what can I do to have a better time?
Yes. That's a good point, that maybe diffusion is a strategy that could help a lot with judgments towards yourself and other people.
And others. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there other diffusion strategies that you've learned over time that you tend to gravitate towards or that you find helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the ones that I remember learning early on in grad school is kind of trying to make the thought funny or trying to add some humor behind the situation in order basically to point out to yourself that it's just a thought and not necessarily the reality. So same kind of goal here. Like I think I was taught to try to say the thought in the voice of a celebrity or something, like in your mind, like, you know, maybe what's a celebrity voice that we can all impersonate?
I think Obama is the easiest voice to impersonate.
Liza, everyone thinks you're really stupid. Let me be clear. Everyone thinks you're stupid. Because that was not my best Obama.
Michelle and I think that you are very ugly. You are undateable.
You are ugly. You know, I mean, clearly we're laughing, right? And that helps us realize that it's just a thought like any other, and that, you know, adding that humor can really help with that. And it also kind of makes me think, get a trusted friend in your life that you can do this exercise with, because yes. I think Molly and I doing this together right now is helping each of us realize the humor in some of our thoughts rather than just trying to do that in your own head.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a similar exercise would be like trying to picture the thoughts like written out, like almost picturing like a Word document and you typing out like, you are unlovable. Let's say that's a thought, you know, picturing like writing that out in maybe big red font, like in a big size and some weird cursive, you know, font, and then maybe making it a different color and a little smaller and just kind of moving it around. I think it has a similar function there of just being a little more playful and also, again, just kind of like seeing the thought for what it is. Like, some thoughts are kind of funny.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
One of my favorite diffusion exercises, though, and I would say this is the one that I use personally for myself the most,
yeah,
is viewing certain thoughts as stories. Because what I have noticed is that myself, and I think most of the people that I work with, tend to have different storylines that play in their head about themselves or about the world. You know, like, you're not good enough. You are, you know, you're not lovable. You are not a good enough friend, whatever it may be. Like, we have these stories that tend to play, and then given in certain situations in life, those can like trigger those stories to start to play.
Yeah.
And so the diffusion exercise that I like when that happens is to kind of think of these stories as like Netflix shows or movies, like playing on the TV. So like, okay, this is the, like Molly, nobody loves Molly's story. Or this is the Liza's a terrible therapist story. And you could like picture like, okay, that would be a show that I would probably play on Lifetime. And you can kind of like picture like who would be acting in that show. And
yeah,
just like, what would that actually look like to be playing on the TV? And then you can kind of think like, okay, do I want to sit down in front of this TV and watch the show that I've watched 100 million times in my life? Is that how I want to spend my time? Or maybe I can let this TV kind of play in the background, the way that you kind of have a TV playing in the background when you're like cooking dinner or something. You're focused on chopping the vegetables. You're focused on what you're doing in the moment. But these Netflix shows that your mind loves to play you over and over again are just kind of playing in the background, and you can kind of just let them be there, but not really give them your full focus or attention.
You know, that sounds so helpful. And I think probably part of what's helpful about that is that it, you know, it helps you sort of recognize your own patterns. And, you know, it reminds me of how with DBT skills, we often talk about sort of know your own playbook, like know how you respond to certain emotions, what your urges are, what you tend to interpret, you know. And with this, it's kind of like, learn your stories, you know, learn the thoughts that tend to cause you the most distress. And there's probably a reason for those stories. Maybe it's based on what's happened to you in the past, what different people have said to you, you know, probably a lot of things beyond your control. And these are the stories that are showing up. And so they're going to keep showing up. There's nothing you can do about that. And hopefully it can help you approach when those thoughts do come up with a little more, you know, levity, with a little less self-judgment about those thoughts. So
I
really, really like that strategy, because we all have those stories. We all have, you know, different patterns of thinking that come up and that are really hard for us, and they're different for everyone.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I think like the more we try to get rid of those stories, like sometimes it's really frustrating. Like I've watched this movie a million times. Like, why is this playing again? Like, go away, you know? And I think when we get frustrated at those stories, it actually makes them stick around for longer. Hmm. So I think acceptance and diffusion kind of go hand in hand, where like you are observing that you're having the thought, so that you can get a little less stuck from the thought and have some distance, but you're not trying to get rid of the thought or push it away or make it go away. Because sometimes the more that you try to push a thought away and make it disappear and control that thought, the more that it actually gets kind of stuck in there. So that's why I like the movie metaphor, because you can kind of let it play on the background. You're not trying to turn the TV off. You're letting it play. You're being willing to let it play and accepting that it's there. You're just not really focusing on it as much as you otherwise would be.
So, okay. As you've just been talking, this has been reminding me of a thought pattern that has been plaguing me this week. and as you were, this has already sort of been coaching for me, because as you've been talking about thinking about our stories and you know, the thoughts that tend to get us the most. I think this is probably part of a larger story for me, or pattern of thoughts for me. And I could use some coaching. So
yeah, let's do some coaching.
Would you be willing to coach me?
Yes, I would love to. Okay. What's the situation? Yeah. What have you noticed?
So basically, and I hope that some of our listeners will be able to relate to this. Last weekend, I had a very overwhelmingly positive experience. And then I noticed myself really ruminating in the days afterward about things about it that I could have done differently, ways that I could have, you know, interacted with people differently, or spent time differently, or savored things more, or, you know, just a lot of self-judgment. And I think that it's interesting because we think of really positive experiences as positive, you know, mm-hmm. And not necessarily bringing up like that self-critique, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping to get some coaching on this. And, you know, it also kind of reminds me of things that we've talked about in the podcast in the past about how, you know, you can have an overwhelmingly positive experience and get really positive reviews, let's say after a presentation at work or at school. And then like the one piece of negative feedback can really send you into, yes. into an abyss.
Yeah, no, this is a great example. And it sucks when that happens,
yeah.
right? Because like, objectively speaking, sounds like there's nothing wrong, you know, everything's good. And your mind doesn't want you to just feel that. Like there's something that's going on inside that's making you doubt that, that's making you question how you acted, how things actually went. And I'm kind of wondering, like, because it's so such a common experience that I think probably everybody listening to this can relate to, like, why do our minds do this? Like, why? I mean, just to kind of normalize it, like, what do you think is kind of the function or the purpose of your mind having you do that after an event that you kind of know is positive, but your mind is just making you like double check that you did everything okay? Why is it doing that?
I mean, I wonder if there's some sort of, you know, evolutionary purpose to not our brains not wanting things to be quote unquote perfect. And maybe it's like a self-improvement. Maybe there's some evolutionary function. I mean, I'm truly making this up right now. I've never been taught this in a class.
That's
or
okay.
Anything.
I would buy it.
Like, I'm wondering if there's, you know, if our brains have evolved to always be looking for how to improve situations. And so it's like an uncomfortable state for the mind to be in of things just being good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could totally see that. Like your mind is like, maybe things weren't as good as we thought that they were. And mm-hmm. if they weren't, what can we learn from this? How can we improve for next time? How can we, kind of continuously try to improve in how you're acting in these situations and how much you enjoy positive events in the future. Yeah. So, I mean, I would guess that maybe we're right, maybe we're not right about the function of this. It's hard to know for sure, but usually when your mind does something like that, as annoying as it can be, it's trying to help. Yeah. And so I would say like, first, let's see if we can like be kind to yourself, be kind to your mind, send some compassion to that part of you that's trying to look out for you, you know, even if you would prefer that it didn't, like it's still there and it's trying to help. So kind of first just sending a little compassion to that part of you.
You know, it's interesting because I think that what you're sort of saying is like, let's normalize it. Mm-hmm. Let's normalize this experience. Let's make you not feel, you know, like a crazy person for having this right. happen.
Yeah.
And feeling like
so
a crazy,
normal.
Yeah. Feeling like a crazy person, quote unquote, can lead to a lot of distress, obviously. And so I think, in some ways that's a little bit like the DBT scale of check the facts, right? Where I'm taking a moment to just say like, okay, is what I'm going through understandable? Yes.
Yes. Is what you're going through understandable? Absolutely. Is it And I could see how like judging yourself for having any negative emotions after a quote unquote positive experience could add suffering on top of that pain that you're already feeling after the event. Like, because now you're judging yourself on top of already feeling anxious about how things went.
Yeah.
And that's just adding a whole nother layer that is probably just makes it more difficult to deal with. So using compassion and, you know, kindness to yourself to just kind of scrape away that top layer and just be like, it's normal. It's okay. Your mind's trying to help you. Let's start there, you know? And from that place, then maybe we can dive into like what some of those actual thoughts are that are coming into your mind. Like if you wouldn't mind sharing what maybe some of the automatic thoughts are that kept popping up into your mind after that weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I also just want to say quickly that the compassion toward your mind for trying to help you is something I could certainly work on. And
yeah.
I think really is like a whole different way of relating to thoughts. And I mean, it's almost like taking a fork in the road and going in a totally opposite direction rather than hating your mind for doing this to you, saying like, thank you, mind, for trying to help me. And now I'm going to just notice the thoughts and move on is a totally different experience. So I think that's so helpful.
Yeah. Wait, can I say one more thing about that?
Yeah, of course.
That I feel like in order to do that, you kind of have to like, you're getting yourself into a place of wise mind when you are able to look at your thoughts and say, thank you. Like, I can see what you're doing. I appreciate what you're doing for me. Like, I'm going to try to take what's useful from what you're trying to do for me and move forward. And I don't need to get stuck in this right now. So I think that's definitely like, it could be even just thought of as like a wise mind, you know, strategy to practice compassion. And maybe we could do a whole episode on that sometime.
I love that idea. Yeah. That's such a great
idea.
Okay. So let's choose one automatic thought, one sort of intrusive thought that I've been having, which is you should have spent time differently.
Okay. So like at this, you know, event that you were at, that you were enjoying yourself and having fun, you were kind of questioning how you spent your time there.
Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I can't even really point to anything specific. It's just like a general nagging thought. Yeah. It's just a very general nagging thought of like, you should have spent time differently. That's all I can really point to.
And what feelings does that bring up when you think about that?
Guilt, shame, maybe not shame actually. I don't think shame. Guilt.
Guilt. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and what does it mean about you if you didn't spend time as well as you would have liked?
Maybe that I don't know.
It's hard. Yeah, I know. Like maybe I'm not as good of a friend or I'm not good enough. I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I wonder if that's kind of like the thought that we could practice diffusing from, because it seems like that automatic thought, which we could also practice diffusing from that, but that's probably one of many thoughts. Whereas this, like, I'm not perfect thought might encapsulate other automatic thoughts that could pop up around this experience.
Yep. Or just in general.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going back to those playbooks or those patterns, this may be one. So using that movie metaphor, like what channel would this movie be on? This movie about how you're not perfect. You're not good enough. Maybe the movie is about woman goes to a party mingling with all the guests and she, you know, doesn't mingle with the most important person there. And it's just horrifying. She leaves and she thinks the one thing that I meant to do at that party, I didn't get a chance to do. And she never is able to forgive herself for that. Like what channel do you think that movie would be on? Or maybe it could be like HBO, like, you know, any.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even sound like that great of a movie, you know? So maybe like some random, you know,
channel that no one's
504. Yeah.
Okay. You're right. Okay. So this is just some random movie that like got really low ratings and like,
I wouldn't watch that movie in my spare time, you know, or maybe I would watch it while I was like folding laundry or, you know, answering email or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it got like, 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. No one really likes watching this movie. Okay. Noticing how your mind might want you to sit down and watch that movie. How, like, is that kind of what it felt like was happening for you after the event?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And so then seeing like, okay, maybe there's a way that we can kind of take the spotlight off of that movie and put it onto the present moment. And as you go through your life today and this week and kind of going forward, noticing when that movie starts to play again and noticing like, that's actually kind of boring. Like, that's not really like my kind of movie, you know? And I've seen it a bunch of times and now it's even more boring because I've watched it a bunch of times. I know how it ends. It's not teaching me anything new at this point. It's not helping me. So maybe if there's a way that you can kind of like picture that being on that TV in the background as you go through your life and try to focus your energy on being mindful and present and fully participating in what you're doing in the present moment while that's kind of playing in the background.
I love it.
You love it?
I love it. I'm going to try it. I mean, okay. even just this few minutes of kind of laughing at the thought. Also, I think what was really helpful for me was rather than focusing on some of the automatic thoughts, as you said, but instead focusing on the more general, you know, themes of negative self-talk that I engage in, was that in itself was a way of kind of separating myself from the thoughts.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the sort of like, I'm not good enough story, as we've talked about. So that in itself, I think, was a cognitive diffusion exercise. And then just adding some humor to it and also thanking my mind for trying to protect me, like all of these things I think are so helpful. And
I think when we got to the point of you of like kind of the thought underneath the thought, like I'm not good enough, it makes more sense when like going back to that question at the beginning of the coaching, like, why is your mind doing this to you? It does make more sense now that we know that that's the thought underneath, because it's like, okay, my mind thinks I'm not good enough and that makes me feel bad about myself. So now my mind is trying to help me think through the ways that I might not have been good enough so that I can be better and so that I can not have to feel like this in the future, you know?
That's so interesting. Well, thank you, Molly, not only for the expert coaching, but also for all of the information on ACT. As we mentioned, please follow links in our episode description if you want to learn more. I am certainly intrigued and really grateful that we got to kind of go in this different direction today. So thank you. And your work, your day-to-day work sounds so interesting. And as a reminder, please follow us at Therapists in the Wild on Instagram and Facebook, at Therapist Wild on Twitter, and please email us at therapistsinthewild@gmail.com. And please, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
So until next month, stay skillful, everybody.